As it often happens, it's difficult for all of us to come together to the same table and have a unique conversation. So on episode 1 of season 1, we talk about race, ethnicity, and sex. All good things have second parts, and now we're recording a second episode on race, ethnicity, and sex due to multiple requests by our listeners. We have new participants in the community, and I will let them introduce themselves, their pronouns, and what is it that they do within the organization they represent.
So my name is Marcus Hernandez. I am Okta's community liaison. Okta stands for the Orlando Queer Trans Asian Association. As a community liaison, I interact with the Orlando community, and we do partnerships, especially with different intersections of race and ethnicity, especially with Asian identities.
That's wonderful, and I look forward to hear a lot more about Asian identities as well. Who else we have at the table?
Hey everybody, my name is Gabriela Rodriguez. I use she, her, and Aya pronouns, and I currently serve as the executive director for a grassroots organization here in the Central Florida area called Q Latinx. We were started shortly after the Pulse tragedy, where I joined in as a volunteer just looking for space to heal. And now 6 years later, we have 6 different departments that work on a variety of different issues, some of them pertaining to gender, race, identity, immigration, healing, anything that sits under the intersections of Latinx and queer.
Fantastic. Welcome. And then to my right.
Hello, everyone. My name is Shakiara Ralat. I use her, she, and ella pronouns. I also work with Q Latinx. I am the lead for the Gender Justice Department, and I have joined the team roughly about 2 weeks ago, and I'm super excited to be here.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So as an icebreaker, since we're having this cafe conversation, can you tell our listeners what beverages are in this bright yellow mugs that we're drinking off?
If I can remember, I want to say it's a citrus tea with ginger. And then I think I opened up the monk fruit as a sweetener.
Nice.
That's really good.
It's getting that voice ready for a long conversation, right? A lot of important topics to discuss.
I have Colombian coffee with, I think it was hazelnut. Hazelnut and caramel.
Yum.
Yeah. That sounds really good. I'm just having plain old water. I've had too much coffee today, so I've been really energized being out and about. So it's really, I just need to stay hydrated
That's always important as well. Well, welcome. So let's get started the conversation a little bit with, you know, textbook definitions as we typically do. And when we say race and ethnicity, we typically say they're like self-identifiers, right? These are social constructs that we have to identify ourselves because there's not a marker. There's nothing that will say, yes, you are, no, you're not, any of these identities that we have, right? So what is so unique about identities in the Latinx spectrum and in the Asian identity spectrum?
I would say that like a lot of like Southeast Asia and especially like North Asia, we have definitely different cultures and definitely different identifiers, and definitely different views of sexuality and gender. I'm Filipino American, and the way I would identify myself as different from someone who's Japanese or Chinese, especially with our different identifiers of gender, a lot of the things in like Southeast Asia, there's not really a difference between gender and sexuality. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it has to do with like, especially the culture and how like everyone was raised.
That's very, very interesting. And I guess for me being, you know, external to the Asian community, right? But I see some parallelisms with the Latinx community because at least with the Latinx community, there's a common language, but still so many different identities from countries of origin and cultural ideas that are very relatable to what you're saying, right? Mm-hmm. So what do we think on like the Latinx Hispanic
One of the conversations that I always have in my community, especially when we're doing HIV awareness or any conversation surrounding like patient information, is that conversation of race and ethnicity, and then that confusion on what that means, right? Because if you come from Latin America, what does that mean to you? So Latinx refers to people with origin from Latin America, which includes Brazil and Haiti, but not Spain. But then you say Hispanic, which means Spanish-speaking origin, but doesn't include Spain. Does include Spain,
yes,
right? But not Haiti and Brazil. So I think there's a lot of confusion, and it's a lot of like conversations that we're having when we're doing these 15-minute tests. That it's like, oh well, I don't identify, right? I identify as Latino or Hispanic, but not necessarily white or black, or what do I put in this box? Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's a larger conversation. And I know that's something that we've gone back and forth on a couple of times, también, that you can elaborate a little bit more on. But then it's also like, what do you see in the community, right? Like when we think of like our novelas or the people that are in our media, they tend to be very light skinned, right? And mm-hmm. where does that put our Afro Latinx folks like in the conversation? I'm sure we'll elaborate a little bit more.
And if you're going to speak about our novelas, the Afro Latinos or Afro Hispanics, they're always the help.
The roles that they get.
They're always the help, and or anyone that looks close to any type of indigenous, they're always the maids and mm-hmm. the ones that steal, and so that stereotype is still very strong in the Latinx community. Still to this day, it's something that we can't shake off.
And definitely, I would agree with you that representation matters, right? And the way you see those communities in TV and in the media helps perpetuate that stereotype, definitely. Also, as Gabby mentioned, it's very important to notice that Latino, Latina, Hispanic is how you identify as your origins, but your race may be very different. It gets very tricky. I have noticed that in my own research when I go out and ask people, you know, my research focuses on Latinx people. So to sit in the table with me in my research, you have to be Latino. I already know that. But then I ask you about your race and people struggle to figure out like, what am I? Am I white? Am I like among the lightest skin in my, you know, among my people? So am I white or am I like Afro-Latino? There's a gigantic Asian Latina community in Peru. There was a big influx of Japanese immigrants, and they even had a president, President Fujimori, and his daughter Keiko Fujimori, both presidents of Peru as well. So there's Asian Latinos as well, and there's Native American Latinos as well. So it's a very interesting mixture that gets confusing when people try to like tease it out.
Eso, and I think sometimes the larger community, we think of Latinidad, and then we put this like cookie cutter what it's supposed to be, and it's like, no, we all have different identities. So it's having that larger conversation to see that we're different, right? And to acknowledge that visibility, because that's another thing, is it's like, oh, okay, we have all these flags that are under the Latinidad, but it's also how do we show those similarities? Mm-hmm. Like we just had a... You went to the Hope Community Center when we were making salsa and we were making pico de gallo. Yes. And it was like, oh, we have all these similar ingredients. We do all these things, but it's just a different name. It's just a different term, right?
It was sofrito and they called it just salsa.
Yeah.
So we use it to cook and to, you know, marinate, to begin marinating everything, at least Caribbeans do. Uh-huh. And Central Americans, they use it also to to season stuff, but they don't call
it
sofrito.
Like
it's like a condiment, like a salsita that they add later. And it was interesting to see that.
That's fascinating. And it also happens the opposite, right? You have the same name for something, but it's something completely different. Like
cake,
you say tortilla.
Bizcocho.
You say tortilla in Mexico is not the same
torta.
As saying tortilla in family. Yeah. The straw, definitely.
Sorbeto in Puerto Rico. So in Puerto Rico, you say sorbeto. And then... Central American is popote.
So when it comes to sexuality, then eventually those differences also show up, right? Especially when you're in a city like, in an area like Central Florida, where you have this melting pot of all countries living together and have all these differences that we have to find common grounds to communicate and find similar expectations. So when it comes to sexual and reproductive health, how are these kind of similarities and differences play a role in that communication? And I will start with Marcus. Within the Asian identity, how does your community navigate those differences in sexual reproductive health?
Oh yeah, I feel like a lot of Asian Americans don't really just navigate due to the culture that they lived in. A lot of people, especially in the Orlando area, there's not really their sexual reproductive health, especially in the Asian community. I feel like a lot of it has to do with like their parents not talking about like sexual reproductive health. A lot of it has to do with like abstinence or like, oh, you have to be married before actually doing sexual things. And a lot of it is like there's no education in their part. So when you actually have like sex and have like different talks about sexuality, a lot of these Asian Americans don't really know how to like navigate that.
So it starts, let's say, for example, a teenager, typical coming of age stories, right? Mm-hmm. So a teenager within Asian community, and probably it's not monolithic, as you said, it's like there's a lot of differences by country and even within countries, by culture within the country. But say a typical teenager comes of age, and is there a conversation with the parents?
Definitely not.
So the talk.
Yeah, there's no talk. It's more like, you have to learn from like your friends or okay. like from other like people, especially like not your parents. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it has to do with like shame, especially like in sexuality mm-hmm. and sexual education. And a lot of it has to do with just abstinence.
So what you say is more in the, is it a combination of both morality being on the conservative side and lack of education, if I'm hearing you correctly, like that lack of having sitting down in your teen years and having the talk, is it what is actually driving it in your point of view?
I feel like a lot of it has to do with like conservative talks with like a lot about your sexuality and sexual education, mm-hmm. since like not a lot of people, especially like Asian Americans, really talk about sex and sexuality. And a lot of it has to do with religion. Mm-hmm. A lot of it has to do with like sex. A lot of it has to do with this conservative idea of what we should do about educating our peers or like our parents about mm-hmm. it.
Huh. That kind of reminds me of that running joke of like a teenager sits with their parents and says like, oh, we need to talk about sex. Okay, mom, what do you want to know? So is there something similar in the Latinx community?
I definitely believe so. As soon as you hit the point of like the religious piece, the culture, just the traditions alone.
It's still there. It's still very antique. So in the Hispanic communities, they still have even the out of wedlock, you know, judgment and all that other stuff. So, yeah, very antique.
So would you say the current times, especially for people in diaspora, right? People from either Asian or Latinx cultures that are coming to the States, living in this Central Florida area, do you see some progress or some changes in the way parent, let's start with parent and children having conversations? Or yes, let's start there. Are there any differences or changes that you're observing?
I would say that there are a lot of resources. Now, the access to those resources and the parents and the child or the youth knowing that those resources exist is still something that I think we have to bridge, because I think we have some amazing nonprofits and organizations and resources and templates and some amazing things online, but it's how is it being delivered, right? And what are those conversations and how are they happening?
Mm. Yeah, but even when we do take those resources to them, what do they do?
But I also think it's baby steps, right? So recently, Q Latinx was at a festival, and we were the only queer organization. But so many people approached our table wanting to know what Q Latinx meant because they had heard the term and there was judgment placed on it, like, oh, you have to adopt the X. And it's like, no, it's an inclusive term. You could still be Latino or Latina, but it's also inclusion of our trans and non-binary folks, and this is why we use it. But it's starting that conversation, saying, hey, we're here and we exist, and it sprinkles into people's heads. And maybe they'll look it up online, or maybe they'll have a larger conversation at home. But I think it's being present and being visible is what's allowing the conversations to at least start.
At least, yeah.
Well, that's but I will say there's still so much work that needs to be done.
Yeah, because I mean, even when we try to talk to them about sexual health or even get them tested, their answer seems to always be, no, I'm okay. That's only for gay people. And I'm just like, right now, cisgender women are number one, correct?
At the highest.
Black cisgender women are at the highest HIV new infections.
Right?
So it's like, how do we get this message through? Because we show up, but it's just they're not wanting to receive it. And that's very concerning.
It is, but I think if we can show statistics and say, hey, we're the second in the nation and the highest in HIV rates, I think if we're able to be consistent in that delivery,
then
we'll get in spaces. Because I think of, like, even for the one wash at a time, we had 36 people that we were able to test and educate. Like, that speaks so much power, right? Yeah. But it's showing up where people are at and not expecting people to walk through your doors, right, and get tested and be the first ones or have that conversation. And I think when we do HIV testings, when we're in the community and we're visible, we're having those conversations about sexuality. We're having those conversations about race and identity. Because they're like, oh, okay, the X. Okay, now I'm going to go home and now I can tell my whole family about X, Y, and Z. So it's a start. It's a start.
Yeah. What really resonated with me is that we do have the resources and we do have all these things. And there's just this lack of, like, especially in the Asian American community, about just showing up and having, like, the education part about, you know, like, sexuality and, like, sexual education. Because I think Asian Americans are the lowest, like, racial and, like, ethnic, like, group that doesn't come in, like, education, sexual, reproductive health. And a lot of it has to do with, like, shaming. A lot of it has to do with, like, oh, like, I don't need to be, like, tested because, like, I only have one partner, and, like, oh, I don't need to have, like, STI testing. It's because, you know, like, I trust my partner to not cheat on me.
They're faithful. I'm in a faithful commitment, and I'm in this relationship where I wouldn't be cheated on. And I'm there with the paper, like.
Yeah, no, I'm just like, oh, like, technically we're married, so that means, like, you know, like, my partner's not gonna cheat on me. But, like, there are exceptions to that. And especially in the Asian community, because, like, you don't really know what your partner is doing.
Now, as Gabriela mentioned, Marcus, there have been some baby steps, right? There's resources out there. There's little by little changes and conversations that are happening. Within your outreach efforts at Okta, what have you observed if there's any baby steps on your end?
I think there are baby steps in accessibility and actually trying to provide education, especially what Okta does. A lot of our resources, we're trying to make it into a hub instead of providing Asian American spaces. A lot of what we do is that, you know, there's still baby steps we have to, like, take, but like, using resources that we have around the greater Orlando community is really important.
That makes a lot of sense. And now when our cultures are in diaspora, right? So we are all immigrating and starting fresh in Central Florida area from our cultures of origin. What are some clashing differences that you go, and this eventually will, my intent is to drive this conversation towards how do we actually mediate those differences, right? But first we need to notice them. So I'll start with the folks from Q Latinx. Is there any clashing differences that you may see that may be a cultural clash between the Latinx community and the mainstream Central Florida community?
I'd say the medical mistrust that exists, right? It's either, and I don't know the correct term, it's either the mistrust, like, no, we're not going to go to the doctor, we're just going to put some Vicks on it and your leg's going to be falling off and you're still going to work, right? Or it's this, yo creo que, like, my provider is everything, I don't need a second opinion. And it's like, espérate, pero, like, do we want to have a larger conversation on, like, what that looks like to see if you have other options? So I think it's either one of those two. And with the medical mistrust piece, right, it's like, hey, you've had a bad experience or you've heard it through someone else, which that's another thing, the Latinx community, I don't know if it's the same for the Asian, is we're very word of mouth. If you said that provider was garbage or you didn't like them or whatever, or you didn't like the organization, then that's it. And that's the end of that. Is that very similar?
Oh, yeah. No, a lot of word of mouth is definitely like a big part of like providers and especially like medical education in the Asian community, because like, oh, like this provider is racist and doesn't like talk about like the sexualities in this intersection, especially as being Asian American. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is like, why aren't we having this conversation, mm-hmm. especially this intersection?
Mm-hmm.
That's real.
And then I'm hoping it works in both directions, right? If people trash talk and say, don't do this and don't go to that organization, it sticks. But the opposite, I hope, is also true.
Oh, yeah, it is. If they you'll get everybody through the door. Everybody through the door. I'm thinking of like two or three providers that I know that are very inclusive, and it only took one person, right? Because you have that stakeholder in the community, mm-hmm. you have that trusted person that's like, oh, well, they said they took care of me and I had this great experience. And again, I think it's all about that storytelling piece también, right? That holds a lot of power for a lot of people, because I trust you, so if I trust you, then obviously they good, right? So, right. So going back to what you were saying, I think identifying a stakeholder in the communities that we're trying to reach is so vital, especially like something that we're working on now as a queer-driven organization is how faith plays such a large role in what we do. And even though there's so much trauma with that, there's still a bridge on what that looks like, because people have lost, right, a piece of them when you're being ostracized. But finding faith leaders, finding individuals that have stake in the community to drive that message and supporting them in driving that message shows that unity and that partnership. And it says, okay, maybe I can take this leap of faith. Maybe I can go get tested. Maybe I can have this conversation. So,
yeah. I love that if I guess the first step into breaking those clashes, those cultural differences, is recognizing them and then figuring out how to navigate them, mm-hmm. right? What has been the approach that Okta has taken to like these cultural clashes that you will see within the Asian community and the Central Florida community at large? How do you help your community navigate it?
Yeah, so a lot of it just has to do with like reaching out and my like position as a community liaison. We try and educate STI testing, HIV testing. A lot of it has to do with just educating the Asian community about like how we can just talk about sexual reproductive health without it being shameful and being like guilty about it. Because a lot of it has to do with our culture, especially a lot of Asian culture, like recognizes and emphasizes that sex is bad and sex has guilt towards it, especially with Asian women and Asian men taking advantage of like, how can we like have this talk and like not take advantage of women.
So do you perceive that being surrounded by a culture where human sexuality and reproductive health and those conversations are a little more normalized, say in the American media, say in the social media, in the newspaper, these conversations in your conversations with your provider, where you have a more normalized checklist of things you go through, like check your cholesterol, check your HIV, check your, you know, blood sugar. So it is, I don't want to say it's completely normalized, but it's heading towards that conversation that has to happen, right? Do you see, going back to the baby steps, do you see baby steps in that direction?
I do, because I think there's a lot more organizations recognizing that need for like that
hey, provider, patient, like support. I think you were even talking before that you hosted a workshop or your group hosted a workshop on what provider and patient conversations should look like. So I think if we can continue those conversations and say, hey, here, this is where we're going, maybe not in the right direction. Maybe mm-hmm. here's some points and some tips on your patient forms that you can use or some language that you can use, right? I think if we continue in that direction, I think we can move mountains, right? But I think people have to be receptive to that conversation. So I think, again, going back to the stakeholder conversation, if we can find a provider that is open and inclusive mm-hmm. to be able to talk that jargon, right? Because they may not necessarily receive the message as well or have them come in with me. Kind of like what you do here is you have a three-prong approach, right? Conversation. So you get everyone's perspective. So they may not heed my ideas, but they may be more open to the other person.
Absolutely. So.
Mm-hmm. But I do see a little bit of change as far as providers. Yeah, I do see that. The baby steps started happening about, like, I'm going to say after the Pulse tragedy.
There was a mm-hmm. lot of unity. Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of unity, mm-hmm. and especially they wanted to help the community, the LGBTQI community. You talked about forms, and I know that a lot of providers now are asking for pronouns, and they're training on, I mean, they still have a really long way to go.
Oh, yeah.
Let me tell you, the emergency room is a nightmare. Like, I was there maybe 10 times last year for a chronic kidney stone thing that I'm dealing with, and the misgendering was, like, present every single time. So the emergency room doesn't really have that much of a bedside manner, but private practices have, and it's been a good change. It's been good to feel included. At least for me as a transgender woman, it has been really good to feel included in those little spaces. Now the big places, they still have a long way to go, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to navigating those cultural differences, for example, in that space, I know for sure that medical interpreters do two roles, right? When there's a person who doesn't have what we call a limited English proficiency, an LEP person at the medical consultation, the interpreter, a certified medical interpreter, will navigate the language, but will also navigate cultural differences, serves as a cultural mediator. But when you speak the language, but you cannot get that common to the same page culture-wise, what's valuable to you, what's important to you with your provider, I think that also drives those clashes, right? Can we talk a little bit more about other practices that may culturally clash? For example, dating expectations, marriage expectations, children expectations, gender roles, all of these other, I guess, larger aspects of sexuality, if you may, that are not necessarily, you know, we definitely would talk about HIV and sexually transmitted infections, but there's these other drivers of sexuality that may definitely clash culturally, right? So how do we navigate that as clients?
I'm going to say navigating it is really difficult, at least for me. Again, I'm going to say being a transgender woman, it's a little bit more difficult, especially with the Hispanic men. The machismo is still so high in the Latino community, Hispanic community. They expect you to do things that you're like, dude, but it's not 1940. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not about to do that. Mm-hmm. I don't care mm-hmm. if the gender role says that I'm supposed, no, I'm not doing it. Like, I don't, but that, then again, I'm a little hard-headed, and I'll sit there and fight for half an hour. I have no problem. The whole Latina thing comes out, but I have no problem saying no. But I mean, just knowing that they expect that still is like, it's a little bit alarming.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, I thought we were moving forward, not backwards, you know? And sometimes you do get that eye opener where you're like, oh my God, they still think like that? What cave did they come out of, you know? And mm-hmm. you're talking about la diaspora, you mm-hmm. know? And I do see that in a lot of Puerto Ricans who came after Maria. They have this, like, the machismo is still so strong that I can't deal with it. I'm mm-hmm, sorry. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I don't.
Yeah, a lot of it, and especially in Asian culture, we still see a lot of gender roles being like used, like the man should like pursue this, like, you know, recording, especially in Filipino culture, the man
still.
Yeah, a lot of it, like, I thought we would like progress, especially like, especially a lot of immigration towards mm-hmm. Especially Angel Island in San Francisco, but you still see a lot of, you know, Filipino women like, oh, like, I don't want to ask this guy to like, you know, go on a date with me because like, this is like, you know, that's not part of my gender role.
Yeah, he has to do it. He yeah. has to court me. Mm-hmm. He has to. Because I have no problem telling somebody, I like you, let's go out. Mm-hmm. And then they're looking at me like, damn, you're easy.
But that's still not the, yeah, the yeah. expectation within the culture.
They're like,
culture,
damn,
right?
You're easy. And I'm like, no, I'm just outspoken. There's yeah. a difference, mm-hmm. you know?
Absolutely.
But that goes into like sexual health and wellness, right? Because as a Latina woman, I'm not supposed to carry condoms or any type of contraception. Oh, mm-hmm. Because if not, then you're going to think XYZ of me mm-hmm. Based on what type of relationships. I mean, the gender roles are still, like you mentioned, we're not in the 1940s. But I think that tradition and culture like plays such a large role for individuals, right? Because they're like, I'm from here and this is what I believe in and this is why I need to believe in it because my parents believed in it and their parents believed in it. And it's like, like, yeah, where are we at right now? So again, it's that sprinkling of information. And I think that's all we can really do is continue showing up and continue being present and continue educating people on like, this is not necessarily the way that we need to think. We could still uphold a lot of tradition and culture, mm-hmm. pero like you can also take out the garbage. We can also like pick up the kids and caregive together, right? In whatever relationship mm-hmm. we're in. Like, let's be real about what this looks like. There's
have diaper change young. Stations in the men's
right.
restroom.
Like, I had a conversation with someone the other day that was like, I had 7 kids and never changed a diaper in my life. And I was like, okay, so let's unpack yeah. that a little yeah. bit. Like, what does that look like? And like, sometimes these expectations based on what type of relationships you're in, right? Of, oh, there needs to be food here on this space. And that works on, so I identify as pansexual. So even though I'm in a committed relationship, I have an open relationship where I'm able to date outside. And one of the things is like, I still feel like when I date feminine presenting individuals, there's still like this level of, if they're mass presenting that they pay or that, and I'm like, we can both receive this bill. We can both have this, like, we're not going to perpetuate these gender roles in this relationship as well. Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I still think even in the, yeah, there's so many pieces there's to that.
Work to be done, right? My favorite gender thing is when they're like, okay, so you're a real woman. Let's see. Can you cook? Yeah, I can cook. I'm not going to cook for you, but I can cook. And it's just like, they feel like being a housewife is the only way that you're a real woman. At least for me, like, that's what I get. They tell me if you can, you know, manage a household and do this and do that, then that's how you're a real woman. And I'm like, no, I'm a real woman because I go outside and work. I'm a real woman because I come in and do all the chores that I need to do to keep my house clean because it's my house. Mm. It doesn't matter. It's not because I'm a woman or a transgender woman or born a certain way. That no, it's about cleanliness. Like, do I need to ask you permission to take a shower? Is that how we're gonna, you know what I mean? Like,
makes sense.
You know yeah, what I'm saying? No. Like, just be clean.
I also think that plays as someone that has children, having children and being a leader in the community and identifying as a woman is, what I get a lot is, oh, well, what are your kids doing? Or where are your kids at? And I'm like, believe me, my kids are taken care of. Like, we figured that piece out. Don't, just because I'm now in the workspace or in the workplace, don't dismiss the fact that I'm a mother or a caregiver. Like, I can still manage both. And that's something that I've gotten so much now that I've become an executive director in the last years. Or if they don't show up in certain places, oh, you're going to have them out so later. Did they eat? And no, I can manage this and I can figure this out. Mm-hmm.
Or how they dismiss you because you're a woman too.
Oh, no, that's, yeah.
That's another story, right? Taking orders from mm-hmm. a woman.
Yeah, like they dismiss her because she's a woman. She's I think the only woman director for the organizations that we even pair up with. it seems like she's the only woman director. And to me, it's that speaks power. Like, she's doing wonderful things. I call her the Wonder Woman of grassroots organizations. And some people dismiss that. And I'm like, how can you dismiss it? You should be happy.
Is that we're seeing a lot of firsts, right? We're seeing a lot of change.
Oh, yeah.
The other day I was reading about a new project that it was called Braid Some Beers. So it was a group of fathers who do not know how to braid their girls' hair. And they will get together over beer and they will learn with mannequins how to do hair.
That's amazing.
So you see that we're still like doing some of the masculine gender roles, like, okay, we're gonna as a group of men meeting to drink a beer, but they will also learn a skill for their family. What are some original ways that you have been approaching those?
But you see how they don't want to lose that masculinity part, so they have to do what's expected of them to aparentar. I don't know how to say that in English.
To appear
uh-huh. Like they're still doing something masculine.
Or to pass.
Pass. They have to drink a beer in order to learn. No, just
but
go.
But it goes up to baby steps. Maybe that's the first stage, right?
Exactly.
And then maybe the next one is where, we're all meeting together with the kids and doing their hair without a beer.
When they graduate and they can do highlights. That's
Baby steps.
So what are some of those like original approaches that you have done? I have heard, Gabriela, that you have been reaching out to laundromats to talk about HIV testing.
Yeah, so I think of it as we need to go to the community and not expect the community to show up, right? Because again, people aren't going to know about us unless we're like, hey, we're here. So one of the initiatives that we started with the center is One Wash at a Time. And it's an initiative to talk about clothing insecurities, as well as providing additional like community resources. So every month we meet at the end of the month, our community already knows we're going to show up, and then we bring additional resources. So like 2 months ago, we did HIV testing. The month before that, we did a pop-up closet. So it's being intentional about our approach, letting people know that, hey, we're going to be consistent. We're building this trust. And then, hey, we can show up with X, Y, and Z and say, Mira, this is Okta, and they're here to talk about X, Y, and Z. And people are so receptive.
They're receptive. Like, and this event is wonderful. When I tell you these people are super grateful to us, mm-hmm. and they show up, they're respectful. Who was it that called us the Golden Girls? Remember?
It was someone that shows up repeatedly.
Yeah, and they're like, you're the Golden Girls of the laundromat, because mm-hmm. you know, we hand out supplies for them to do their laundry, and we even help them out with a little bit of coins so they can do a load or two, you know. And this program is amazing. Like, when I'm in love with it, as she can tell you, I am in love with this program, because the gratitude that you feel from this community, and the need is there, mm-hmm. you know, and you see them showing up, and, you know, we provide food and we provide testing and anything that they might need, we mm-hmm. try to have it. And it's amazing.
And I love it because it's a captive population that you already have there. They're waiting at least 15 minutes for the clothes to dry or for the clothes to wash.
But it's being intentional,
right? So you
can
have that conversation. They're already there waiting. So you might as well educate, test, mm-hmm. treat, provide resources, which I love that approach. It's like very original, just like the beers and braids. What is Okta? How is Okta reaching out to the community?
Yeah, so we actually did the sex work project. Since we have a lot of community in like the greater Orlando that are sex workers, especially like Asian sex workers, and we wanted to take this fund and especially is emphasize and highlight that a lot of it has to deal with like sexual education and how we can build that trust, especially mm-hmm. like providing resources to sex workers. And a lot of it was like HIV testing, STI testing, because we need to educate especially the Asian American community who are sex workers to not feel guilty and not feel shame, especially getting tested.
About their own health and their own well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And if I hear you correctly, culturally, sex has that heavy stigma, shame load on it, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I can only imagine for sex workers mm-hmm. how much that potentiates and multiplies, right?
Mm-hmm.
So within those workshops, what kind of approaches do you do? Do you bring like a testing van? Do you do education pieces? Do you provide, I don't know, resources, condoms?
Yeah, so we provide like condoms, we provide testing. A lot of it has to do with like creating the space for everyone to not feel guilty, not feel shame in sexual reproduction, because a lot of Asian culture still is conservative, especially in because they're traditional, especially with a lot of like first generation Asian Americans. So we try and like create the space with Okta by making sure like no one feels guilty about sexual like health.
That makes sense. And kudos for that approach as well. I know it has its challenges, definitely. Mm-hmm. But baby steps. I think that's the theme of this conversation. Yes. We're seeing change one baby step at a time. In other podcast episodes, we have talked about some negative effects, right? Some why these cultural intersections of culture, race, ethnicity are driving bad health outcomes. But I'd like to end the podcast typically on a positive note. And what kind of positive outcomes we're seeing from living in our communities within the Central Florida area? What are some good things that are happening?
Yeah, so we recently hosted a conversation at the Hope Community Center. And what was really awesome is that we had Latina identifying mothers and women that led those conversations, speaking to Latina women. So we were able to find stakeholders in the community to have that conversation that was comfortable with disclosing that they were HIV positive, comfortable disclosing that they had barriers to understanding their own health. And within those conversations, the individuals in the audience were like, oh my, this is why I need to take care of, because you look like me and now this resonates and this looks real to me. So I think that was a positive outcome, right, of that conversation, is they saw someone that was visible to them. They saw someone that was relatable and they were like, oh, okay, this is why I need to do this.
And in the Okta side, I know you have been working with the Asian sex work community. What are some positive outcomes that you have seen from that or any other community activities that you have been doing?
Yeah, so I feel like it definitely breaks the traditional, like, conservative way of, like, how we approach sex and actually sexuality and especially gender. Especially it's an emphasizing that toxic masculinity, and we have this positive outcome that we don't have to conform to these gender roles and we don't have to conform to just our sexuality, and that there's an intersection with our race, our ethnicity, and how we can further become whole. And a lot of it has to do with other communities and how, and especially with Gabby's like visibility, if someone else, especially that someone else that like looks like you, like you're more likely to like trust them and actually go further into how like we can educate each other.
Well, I'm even thinking about the event that we're doing next month for Asian HIV Awareness Day. Like, even the fact that we're like bridging and creating that partnership, there may be someone that identifies as the Asian Latinx and they're like, oh wow, you know what, that's why I need to get tested, right? Because y'all are here. Y'all are present.
Yeah, there's a lot of like Afro, like Latinx people that live in Asia, especially in the Filipino community. And a lot of it has to do with like not being represented in both of those communities. And it feels like, oh, I have to pick like one of my identities, like either I'm Asian or Latinx. But a lot of it in our like greater Orlando community emphasizes that, oh, you can be both of those.
I agree.
And make sense of those, both of those identities, right? Now, when it comes to your organizations that are represented here at the table, I want to give you the space as well to
talk a little bit more about resources. Previously at a workshop that I attended with Gabriela, I learned that you can collaborate with the three T's in the community, which is time, treasure, and talent. So if you're taking any collaborations, anyone who wants to know more, volunteer, any opportunities for them, or resources in general for the community, how can they reach out to QLatinx?
Yes. So we are very alive on social media. We have Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and you can be found at QLatinx, QLatinx.
Also TikTok.
Oh, yeah. Yes, we just finished adopting TikTok, which we're starting to get on that because at the end of the day, right, it's finding different audiences and communities. And then we also have our website, which is www.qlatinx.org. But I would definitely say our social media, we're always posting when we have different workshops, when we're having different events. We have a lot of different collaborations that we partner with, and we keep that updated. A lot of our events are always free, open to everyone in the community. So we welcome anyone and everybody.
Beautiful. And
there's also I'm going to be starting a group for transgender women, and their applications will open
May 23rd
until June 13th. Okay. So May 23rd to June 13th, I'll be taking applications for a group for transgender women who, anyone that needs just a space to be themselves and feel free and come to heal and connect with others, that's what this space is going to be about. Also education on sex, drugs, anything that's going to be affecting your health, that's also going to be in there. Financial literacy, many other things that the community needs help with. I'm going to try and provide some type of knowledge. And so I would love for anyone that's hearing, if you're a Latinx transgender woman, come out and seek the application, and we'll go from there. I'm super excited.
And we will leave a link for those applications and for the social media channels of QLatinx as well for all of our listeners out there. Now it's time for Octa. What kind of resources and how do people stay in touch, either if they want to volunteer, contribute, or if they want to reach out and use your resources as well? Anyone in the Asian community out there who may want to stay in touch, what do they need to do?
Yeah, so we're very active in our social media as well. So our social media name is OctaFL. So that's OQTAAFL. And our website is www.oqtaa.com. So octa.com. So we're trying to make this space for our Asian American community. Mm-hmm. So we host a Pride of Color. We host like a book club, especially the ones that emphasize queer and also Asian American stories. We provide resources, especially STI and HIV testing. And we just want to create this space that a lot of queer Asians don't really have in the greater Orlando community.
That's beautiful. Do your organizations have a physical space where people can come visit a tour or just say stop by and say hi?
Yes. So we're located at the LGBTQ Center, and that's at 946 North Mills Avenue, Orlando, Florida, 32803. We have an amazing office. Calito, which is our resident artist, created a mural. So I definitely invite individuals, if they want to come down, stop by and say hi.
Absolutely. And have a cafecito with Gabby.
Eso.
And with me, Shakiara, I'm going to be also in that office providing any type of knowledge, any type of healing. I'm going to be there for the community.
That's wonderful. I look forward also to have a cafecito with you over there.
Cafecito con leche. Remember that.
Is it our services then provided both in English and Spanish?
Correct.
That's important to let our listeners.
And not just the materials, but like, right, there is also translation support as well.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Octa is a very small organization. Mm-hmm. It's still very new. So we don't really have a physical space, but we provide an online community instead. We do have a Discord, especially for the Asian community who are also queer. So we still provide resources and we still like give announcements. for any of those.
Okay, and just for Gabrielle, it's probably a little easier with a single language that you can spread throughout the communities. But how about Okta in language services? Do you provide materials or resources in English only, or do you have a pan-Asian availability within Asian languages?
So that's something we want to work on, since there are a lot of Asian languages. And there's a lot of like translation errors, a lot of things that can't really be translated in English, especially in the Filipino community, especially in how we describe gender and mm-hmm. sexuality, because there's not really that talk. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it has to do with just different cultures, especially. So that's something we want to work on, and definitely something we can further like educate people on.
Lovely. So listeners out there who speak any of the Asian languages, this is a great opportunity to start translating and localizing materials that would be adequate for the community. That's a great way to help with one of the T's, right? With talent mm-hmm. and a little bit of your time to help translate. And here we go for the alliteration, right? To help translate those materials and further help the community. So I look for, we will, as always, we will also leave those social media handles so they can reach out and stay in touch and hopefully make those connections through the podcast. Nice. So it has been lovely then to have Okta and Q Latinx represented today here with Marcus, Gabriela, and Shakira. So thank you very much for joining us today. And our listeners, stay in touch, because there's going to be a lot of opportunities to contribute, volunteer, and help support or use the resources that are provided to our central community, Central Florida community at large. Thank you very much for joining us. And this has been a part two on race, ethnicity, and sex here at the Sex Cafe podcast.